So today I'll talk about some new lore bounds for general locally decodable codes. This is work in progress, and it'd be nice to get some feedback on this. So let me start off by defining a locally decodable code, which you've seen many times today. So a Q, comma epsilon, comma delta locally decodable code is an encoding C from 0,1 to the N to 0,1 to the M. And here I'm going to consider only binary codes. These codes have a randomized decoder A, such that for every message X in 0,1 to the N, and for every index I in the set of integers 1 through N, which we use this notation for, and for every noisy received word Y, which is close to the uncorrupted code word, so the Hamming distance between Y and C of X is at most delta times M, we have the following two properties, that the probability over the randomness of the decoder A, given some index, given this I and N, you can think of oracle access to this noisy version of C of X, Y, and its randomness, it outputs xi with probability at least 1/2 plus epsilon. And the local decodable property is that A queries at most q positions of y. Okay. So what's known about this problem? So we're going to consider epsilon, delta, and q all constant. This is the typical setting studied these days. And the goal is to learn the trade-off between the number of queries Q and the length of the encoding M. And so for Q equals 2, there's an easy upper bound from the Hadamard code, which gives you M equals 2 to the N, and a beautiful result of Karanidis and DeWolf, which shows that actually that bound is essentially tight, showing that M is 2 to the omega N. And so this case is essentially resolved up to constants in the exponent. For q greater than 2, unfortunately, much less is known about this problem. Prior to this work, there's a lower bound of n squared over log squared n, also due to Karanidis and DeWolf, and a recent breakthrough of Sergei Yekanin, which shows that m is less than 2 to the order n to the epsilon for some small, very small epsilon, perhaps subconstant epsilon. And for q greater than 3, there's another lower bound following from the work of Karanidis DeWolf, which grows as follows. It's omega n over log n to this exponent, 1 plus 1 over q over 2 minus 1. And the best upper bound can be obtained by combining Sergei's result with a generic recursion technique of Baimel, Ishai, Kushelevitz, and Raymond, and again has this form 2 to the O to the N to the epsilon. Since general lower bounds are hard to come by, many papers have looked at restricted models for this problem. Goldreich, Karloff, Schumann, and Trevisan look at linear codes for two queries. There are these other notions of small probe complexity studied by those authors, as well as Vinner DeWolf, the bilinear group-based model we just saw Sergei give a talk on, and a notion called affine PIR due to Ito. And I won't get into the details of these assumptions. For general codes, proofs are very hard to come by. The known result for two queries uses quantum information theory, surprisingly, to prove this result, this classical result. And as we saw this morning, maybe the quantum model is not really necessary for two queries, as Alex Samardzinski showed. What we really need here is some convexity inequalities on matrices, positive semi-definite matrices. The proof is very inspired by the quantum approach, though, and what Luca Trebizond asked in one of his survey papers is to reprove the results of this Kernius-DeWolf paper without using quantum information theory.
It's possible that we may need to use more quantum rather than less quantum solids.
Sorry.
It's possible that we may have to use more quantum rather than less quantum solids.
That's certainly possible. So the first of our results is that we can slightly improve the known lower bound for general locally decodable codes for any odd number of queries Q. So the improvement is not huge. It has the following form. So for three queries, we can improve the previous lower bound from n squared over log squared n to n squared over log n. For Q equals 5, we improve it from n to the 3 halves over log to the 3 halves, n to the 3 halves over log n. In general, we take the previous bound of Kernius-DeWolf and we're able to pull out a log factor. So you know, it might seem that our bounds are very far to the truth, but I dare anyone to conjecture what the what the right answer is here.
Conjecture about scientific rules, but about who will win between the upper bound and the upper bound.
That would be.
So. Okay. And so actually, I'm not even aware, before this work, how to prove this lower bound for general Q of Kernius-DeWolf, even without quantum information theory, even for linear codes. So if I make the restriction that the code, each position in the code word is computing a linear function of the message, it's unclear if you need quantum information theory to match the previous lower bound. And so we address this question. So for linear codes, we don't use any quantum information theory at all. We can reprove the known lower bounds and, in fact, improve the known lower bounds slightly. And so it seems that combining our techniques with those of Sam Rudnitsky, for every Q and for general codes, we can probably improve the known lower bounds for LDCs without quantum. So in this talk, I give a reduction from Q queries to 2 queries, which is completely non-quantum. And as we saw this morning, that for Q equals 2, there's a non-quantum proof. So combining these, it seems to me that now all the bounds can be proved without proven without using quantum information theory. So for linear codes, I'm able to push the bound a little bit further to n squared over root log n for 3-query linear codes. There are some nice properties here that it holds, our lower bound holds for infinite fields, similar to the lower bound for 2 queries you saw by Beer and Spielka yesterday. It holds for adaptive decoders, and this is a bit non-trivial since we're looking at infinite fields, so you can't do this standard reduction from adaptive to non-adaptive codes. And there's some insight on the adaptivity here. It's not very deep, but the techniques show that any multi-round linear private information retrieval scheme can be converted into a one-round scheme with only a constant loss in the parameters. And this really makes use of the linearity of the protocol. And so I think that this lower bound should hold for general codes, but like I said, this is still work in progress.
Do you believe that the claim on adaptivity
in
general
terms? Oh, I'm sorry, no. I think this should hold for, this bound should hold for binary general locally decodable codes, not for, I don't know, but I don't believe that, well, I don't know if it holds for adaptive or infinite fields. Okay, so now in the remainder of the talk, I'll give you an overview of the lower bound for general codes. If I have any extra time, I'll show how to optimize it further for linear codes. So there are 5 steps to this proof. The first step uses known reductions to convert a locally decodable code to a code of a very special form. So first, I claim that we can look at non-adaptive, locally decodable codes with non-adaptive decoders. This was observed by Katz Trebizond, that if you have a Q delta epsilon locally decodable code, that has an adaptive decoder A, then you have a Q delta epsilon over 2 to the Q, actually slightly better here, but this is sufficient for us. Local decodable code C prime with a non-adaptive decoder A prime. And the idea is very simple, that A prime just guesses a path in the decision tree followed by A. So since the field size is 2 and you're making a constant number of queries, this only changes your recovery probability by a constant. So it's still bounded away from 1/2. So we can assume we have a non-adaptive LDC. And actually, we can assume some more. So we can assume that we have what's known as a smooth code good on average. So a QC epsilon smooth code that is good on average is an encoding from 0,1 to the n to 0,1 to the m with a randomized decoder A such that for any index I and n and any index j in the code word or the noisy code word, well, sorry, in this case it's just in the code word, we have the probability over messages x and the randomness r of the decoder given an index I and given access to the actual uncorrupted code word C of x, that the probability the decoder outputs xi is at least 1/2 plus epsilon. So this is just the correctness constraint, and this is trivial to satisfy without the second condition, which is the smoothness constraint of the code, which is that the probability over x and r that that the decoder A on inputs I, C of x, and r reads the jth position of the code word is at most C over m, where C is the smoothness here, and in this talk it's always going to be some constant. The fact that we've already assumed that the decoder is non-adaptive implies that the positions it reads are independent of x. I mean, it can't see some answers and then choose to change its query pattern. And again, this Q here means that A queries at most Q positions of C of x. So what Katz and Trevor Song show is that a Q delta epsilon locally decodable code is also a Q divided by epsilon Q divided by delta epsilon smooth code, which is good on average. So Q and delta are constants. This is constant smoothness. Epsilon is the same. Q is the same. And smooth codes good on average have this nice matching property that Alex talked about this morning, which is the following. Initially shown by Katz and Trevisan, which is that so smooth codes good on average have matchings, and for all I indices I and 1 through n, there is a collection m sub I of omega m disjoint Q sets s in m such that the probability that the decoder succeeds to output xi, given that it reads such a Q set of positions in the code word, is at least 1/2 plus epsilon. So the picture here is these are the positions of the code word, and for each I you have, so this would be Q equals 3, for each I you have a matching. In this case, it's perfect, but in general, maybe some of these, a constant fraction of these vertices might be unmatched. Okay. So for every I, you have such a matching. And so using a little Fourier analysis in the paper by Kernius and DeWolf, I think it's a theorem attributed to Trevisan, which is that if you have a code C, a QC epsilon smooth code that is good on average, then there exists a Q theta 1 smooth code good on average with the following special property. And so here, theta is going from now on to suppress factors in Q, C, and epsilon, which are constant. The decoder A on input index I, all it does is it looks at the matching and it chooses a random Q set, a random element of this matching. And what it does is it just outputs the XOR of the positions it reads or the complement of the XOR. So you have this, yeah, so is this clear? So you have this collection of sets, all the decoder does is chooses one at random, takes the XOR. So I'm just going to assume it's actually the XOR and not its complement, just for notational simplicity in this talk. So just a quick recap, locally decodable codes imply smooth codes go on average, using some Fourier analysis, you can show that the smooth decoder just outputs the sum of the values it queries. And so in the remainder of the talk, we can just consider this very special code C, for which for every index I, there's a matching MI of constant density, such that for any set in the matching, the parity is correlated with XI, with so the probability they agree is at least 1/2 plus epsilon over so over X here. Okay. So now we have these codes of a special form, and now I'm going to analyze these using some graph theory. So I call this section finding a dense set in the recovery graphs. So I'm going to define a hypergraph as follows. The hypergraph G has coordinates which are just indices in M, the code word positions. And the hyper edges of G are Q edges, or the sets of size Q, which occur in at least one MI. And in this case, the hyper edge is labeled by I. So you have these hyper edges of size Q, the label is the matching that it occurs in. And now we said that for every I, there is a matching of constant density. So this hypergraph has theta M and hyper edges. And I claim that there exists a non-empty sub-hypergraph, G prime of G, with minimum degree omega n. Well, I mean, the average, there are m vertices, m n hyperedges. The average degree of a vertex in this hypergraph is omega n. And by iteratively removing low-degree vertices, you can actually construct a sub-hypergraph with minimum degree omega n. This is a standard reduction, so I won't describe how to do this. Okay, so now we're going to concentrate on this minimum degree n subhypergraph G prime. Choose any vertex in this hypergraph, and let n of v, choose any vertex v, and let n of v denote the neighbors of v in G prime. Then what is the size of n of v? Well, we said that it's the minimum degree of this graph is n, so v has degree omega n, it can occur in a, at most one. So it has omega n q edges incident to it, and it can occur in at most once, in any given mi, since these mi's are matchings. So from v together with its neighbors, you can reconstruct omega n positions of the message. That's what it means for a for an edge to occur in this matching MI. And therefore, by information theory, the size of the neighborhood must be at least omega n. So, of course, V is incident to n Q edges, but this doesn't necessarily mean that its neighborhood has size omega n, since it's not a graph, it's a hypergraph. But then using information theory, you can actually show what you expect, that the neighborhood has size omega n. Any questions? Okay, good. So this is just the picture. We chose some arbitrary vertex V. These are its neighbors. So this is for the Q equals 3 case. These are the labels of the hyper edges. And now what we're going to do is we're going to consider the neighbors of the neighbors of V. And so here's n of V, these vertices down here. And you know, these vertices all occur the hypergraph, so we know that M is at least the size of the neighbors of V, and the whole proof is going to be by bounding this set of vertices will be our lower bound for M. In particular, well, this is the whole proof for general codes. So this in particular shows an we'll give an omega n squared barrier for our lower bound approach, but for linear codes we can actually go out a little bit to a little bit more levels. Okay. So note that since this has size omega n, and each has minimum degree n, there are n squared hyper edges here. We just don't know yet if there are n squared vertices here. Okay, good. Okay, yeah, so just recapping the section, we have this minimum degree omega n subhypergraph G prime. We found the set NV with size omega n and this incident to omega n squared hyperedges. This completes the second part of the proof. And the third part is what I call the random restriction.
Sorry, David, can you go back one slide?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it incident n squared hyperedges?
So we said that the size of n of v is omega
right.
n. And these vertices occur in a hypergraph G prime with minimum degree omega n.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And so collectively they're incident to omega n squared hyperedges. So like if an edge occurs in multiple matchings? Is this what you're worried about? So the simple answer to this is that since the edge has a constant number of endpoints, it can occur in most a constant number of matchings. You throw out if it occurs more than once. Okay. So this is the idea behind the random restriction. Well, this is what I mean by this. So we're going to fix the assignment of the code on theta n positions in this neighborhood n of v that I'm talking about by restricting the set of possible messages x that are allowed. So we have this huge code, and we're going to just fix the assignment to some of the positions in the code, and this of course rules out some of the potential x's we can still encode. After we do this restriction, now every q edge incident to nv is now effectively a q minus 1 edge. Part of it, one of its endpoints is fixed. And so in some sense we have a q minus 1 query code, and we're going to exploit this fact. So we save one query whenever the decoder queries one of these q edges. And so just in pictures, so this is our the section of the hypergraph G prime we're considering. These are all x and 0, 1 to the n, this circle, and what we're doing is we're wiping out some x. We're only considering the black x now, which are those x which agree with some fixed assignment to part of the neighborhood. So, okay. And moreover, so when we fix an assignment here, we have a few problems, right? So if we fix an assignment on, say, alpha n vertices, then we expect 2 to the n minus alpha n different x to be preimages for that assignment. But for some assignments, we might have very few preimages. We need to rule this out. We still need a lot of entropy in x left in the code. That's one problem. Another problem is that recall that each of these edges is only good for a 1/2 plus epsilon fraction of different x's. And it may be the case that after we perform our restriction, the edges don't mean anything anymore. They're not. They don't have good correlation with their edge label. So the two goals we need to achieve is that we want many different x for this to survive after this fixed assignment, and we want, so this is 2 to the omega n we need, and we want still omega n squared surviving hyperedges after this restriction. And so,
David,
yeah?
Are you reasoning about general codes or linear codes?
General codes. So these are the two, in more detail, these are the conflicting goals I just mentioned. And so I won't describe how to do this in the talk, but you can use the probabilistic method together with a certain weighted distribution on assignments to show that there's some good assignment which essentially overcomes both of these problems. Guarantees you have a high amount of entropy left, and at the same time omega n squared good edges incident to n of v. So by choosing this assignment from a certain weighted probability distribution, call this the set of remaining x, L, will be the notation, we can guarantee that L has size at least 2 to the n minus 2 alpha n. So I said we're fixing alpha n coordinates. We expect 2 to the n minus alpha n. We lose a little bit, but it doesn't matter. And we also lose a little bit in the in what we can recover. So now I just guarantee that for omega n, different indices I, so some of these indices might have just been wiped out completely, that I have omega n hyper edges E and MI that are incident to n of V and still have this property that we started off with, that the sum of their endpoints is correlated with XI.
And now one of these endpoints is actually a fixed function. So the sum, the probability is now over L, the surviving X. Okay. Any questions? Okay, good. So the next part of the proof is a reduction from Q queries to 2 queries. So for simplicity, I'm just going to show reduction from 3 queries to 2 queries. The same ideas can be used for larger Q. So what we're going to do is we're going to define a huge code, C prime, which is our function of our original code, C. And we're going to do it as follows. So C prime is going to map this L, the set of surviving X, to 0, 1 to the M prime. Where m prime is much larger than m, it's m to the m over n. And the coordinates of c prime are sums of subsets b of size exactly m over n of the original code. So what this means is that the coordinates of this new big code c prime are indexed by subsets b of indices of the original code. And the function at that position b in the new code, g of b, is just the sum over all indices j and b of f of j. So we're just, what we're doing is if we have this this old code, then we're choosing m over n positions and taking the sum to get positions in the new code, c prime. So, so this is a listing of the coordinates of the old code, and I use this circle to denote the fraction of coordinates which occur in a matching MI incident to N of V. So, we know that we have for many different I, we have omega N hyperedges incident to N of V. In Ni, and they all lie over here, say. And the property here is intuitively, since I'm sampling roughly m over n positions, that's enough to hit a hyperedge in this small fraction of coordinates. So I'll explain this in more detail now. So suppose b is a subset of the functions of c of size m over n chosen uniformly at random. And fix any index I and n, then with constant probability we have the following properties. We have that there exists a three edge, A, B, C, in MI. So here is the picture. A is in N of V, B and C are neighbors, are the other vertices on this hyperedge. And what we have is that we sample B, but we don't sample C. So, and this just occurs because I'm sampling m over n things, so I expect a constant fraction to lie in this this set of density n over m, and so again with constant probability, I expect this particular behavior to occur, that I hit at least one of these three edges. And now what I'm trying to do now is reason about this big code, and I'm trying to say that I can find a matching of pairs in this big code, and talk about applying lower bounds, two-query lower bounds to this big code. So I just consider the set B prime. What I do is I remove B, little b, from B, and I put back in I put in C. So everything else in the set is the same. I just swapped two positions that I'm looking at. So this still occurs, and so if B occurred before now and C did not, now C occurs and B does not. And then the observation is that you have the following. So consider the sum of G sub BX plus G sub B prime X. Each of these, by definition, is a sum of functions in the original code. The first is the sum over j and b of f sub j of x. The second is the sum over j and b prime of f sub j of x. And actually, everything cancels since we're over, this is binary, we're working over GF2. Everything cancels except for the positions B and C, which are the only difference between B prime and B. So you're just left with F sub B of x plus F sub C of x, and well, F sub B of x plus F sub C of x plus F sub A of x is correlated with xi, so you get that this equals xi plus F of A of x with probability bounded away from 1/2. And like I said, now F of A of x, F sub A of x is constant since we did this random restriction for all A and N of V. So we can hardwire F sub A of x into the decoder. And so what we did is we took, so we've essentially found matchings for many different I and N of pairs of functions of our big code with constant density. So does this make sense? Are there any questions here? So this is recapping what we've done. So we've just proven a property of our big code C prime. So we have a set I of indices with constant density, such that for our big code from 0, 1, sorry, this should be L, to 0, 1 to the M prime, with M prime equals M to the M over N, we have this matching property that, for every index I and I, M prime contains a matching WI of disjoint pairs indexed by sets B, B prime, for which the probability over X and L that the sum of functions G sub B of X and G sub B prime of X equals xi is at least 1/2 plus theta epsilon. And the matching sizes are now of constant density in the big code. So, is this clear? Okay, good. So if there are any questions at any point, just stop me. So now we essentially have a two-query code, and we can apply two-query lower bounds. So this is just saying exactly what was on the previous slide, and you know we have this matching of disjoint pairs of correlated functions correlated with some xi. Each one has constant. Each matching has constant density. So it seems like we can just use two-query bounds. There are a few caveats, which is that first. This probability is over X in L rather than all of the hypercube. Another caveat is that the code only works for a constant fraction of the indices in the set 1 through N. But these aren't real problems. So you can slightly modify the quantum lower bound. I won't get into the details. And actually, in this case, I think you can use Samar Dominski's result in place of the quantum tools, and actually this would give you a completely classical proof for general codes. So like I said, the two caveats are that this index set I is only has size omega n, and the set L has size 2 to the n minus 2 alpha. But if you set alpha sufficiently small, you can adapt these techniques, and you essentially get this omega n, which comes from the information that's still left about x, is at most O of log of m prime. And this, if you're familiar with the quantum argument, this comes from the number of qubits needed to encode this big code, is this number, log m prime. And so m prime is m to the m over n, and you get just by substituting variables, that's, this is m to the m over n, and solving, you get n squared equals O m log m, and so actually you get m equals omega n squared over log n. And that's the whole proof. And so I'll just briefly touch on, if you just have linear codes, there's something simpler that you can do. When you take these sums of functions, since the fj are linear functions, so are the sums. And actually, if you get correlation with some xi, if a linear function correlates with xi with probability, it agrees with xi with probability bounded away from 1/2, then actually the linear function equals xi. And so now what we can do is we can apply an isoperimetric inequality due to Goldreich et al. On the hypercube. So we the vectors are in F2n, and we have this property that now we have a matching of pairs of vectors which sum to EI exactly. So that means that they have an edge between them on the hypercube, and this is exactly essentially the same inequality we had in the quantum case, but now it's just proven using a cube inequality, and you get m equals omega n squared over log n. Okay, so how much time do I have? Five more. Okay. So some further improvements. So I said for three-query linear codes, we can improve the bound further to n squared over root log n. It holds for infinite fields. The intuition here is that we really just give a rank argument. It's completely insensitive to which field we're using. And therefore, it also holds for adaptive decoders. I mean, you can show that the decoder most of the time must choose sets which span each xi, and it doesn't really matter which field you're using. And the assumption that that linear PIR might as well be one round, well, it's based on the same sort of idea, so that for each database, many query responses contain xi in the span. Otherwise, since the communication is much less than n, two databases would agree on the same communication pattern with a different value of xi. And therefore, the server can just assume, the user can just assume the server has the all zeros database, make all queries in one round, and then the answers they get actually contain xi in the span, and therefore can recover xi for the actual database. It's not a very deep reduction here. So. Let me just mention some idea for the improvement of n squared over to n squared over root log n. Basically, what you can show, so now you have linear codes, and these are just vertices in the hypercube. You can show there exists, there is a construction such that this size is exactly n squared over log n. So you can't prove a better lower bound just by looking at two levels in this hypergraph. And the rough idea of improving better lower bounds is this is a bit too complicated. So I'll just say that the idea is, suppose you really got n squared over log n vertices in this level, then that means that since there are n squared edges, each of these vertices is roughly incident to log n different hyper edges in this level. And then, so what you can do is you can greedily choose vertices of high degree in this level. And now you look at the neighbors of those vertices. So each of these vertices has degree roughly log n, since you only have n squared over log n vertices, but n squared edges. And now you choose these vertices greedily, and what you can do is you can, the neighborhood of those vertices contains n log n vertices. And moreover, the top part of the top part of those vertices is zeroed out from this projection, and you can project another constant fraction of vertices to zero, and now you get two endpoints projected of a three-edge projected to zero, and you can also, so this is very high level, you can also project a constant fraction of the EIs to zero, and now you take a whole three-edge and it just becomes a single vertex, and in a sense what you've done is you've projected n log n vertices to zero. So we were limited here in the sense that we could only project n vertices to zero. If we tried to project any more, then we just might wipe out all of x. But if there really are only n squared over log n vertices here, then you can define a projection which projects n log n things to zero, and then look at the neighborhood of that and get an even stronger lower bound. So that's very fast, I don't have time. So just to conclude, we improved the previous best three query lower bound for general codes, and so I just said the remaining things on the slide. So that's all.